selam kesmedi. Ben hep polisim. You know, psychologically the mind is interesting, honorable member. I was waiting for the bell to ring. He's scribbling other things. And I look at this, they have checked me from this. I've left. Until I saw it's 1 minute or five. Sorry about that. Waiting for bell. We are continuing, and because now our energy levels are pretty low. Not that we'll be unfair, but let's try to be very efficient. Sir. We have Baba Dumangosi now, the chair of EDI Holdings, to share with us their experiences during the time, the heydays of the electricity distribution industry holdings. Around the topic of today. Without wasting any time, over to you, Kawa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm sure you will note on the presentation, it refers to chairman. It is in terms of regulations that governed the EDI. So it's chairman of the board. Yes. Because it doesn't actually discriminate in terms of gender. The point maybe one would like to raise, Chair, is just to say the EDI holding has been wound up. I'm sure for the portfolio committee we may have to come in terms of our final annual report. And obviously one is hoping to have the final board meeting to switch off the light and close, lock the doors. So I think at this stage, it will be myself as the chair, one employee who acts as the CFO, and the administrator who technically takes the place of the CEO. I'm sure we'll be able to follow up on that. But in terms of presentation, Chair, there are issues that one may want to cover, but I thought as an introductory part, one wanted to take just a few comments linked to other presentation made earlier, because quite important. We have actually picked up that issue of municipal funding. The DG Energy raised an issue of fiscal framework. I'm not sure if ever it will be the same issue in terms of funding of municipalities. Because the issue of concurrence of the responsibility did create a bit of a challenge to a point where the issue of funding was missed and it was discussed at the same time when you talk about electricity as an income earning kind of resource at the municipality. But I think the point one would like to raise that we need to encourage and request those who have to look at the issue to look at a full process around the funding of municipalities. But as a point linked to that, the issue of electricity distribution, because it does actually bring income, one wanted just to raise a point of encouraging municipalities to look after it and invest on it. I'm sure in the presentation that issue has come up. The short term, which I always use, Chair, was to say, we shouldn't kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Because if we don't look after the infrastructure of electricity, we may find it has got a whole lot of other implications that may be negative. But the point that came up as well, I think, through other presentation was the infrastructure investment. The more we invest on infrastructure, it does look like we should be able to look at the maintenance plan, which means for any infrastructure that we invest in, we should be able to have money put aside to look after it. I do agree with the logic as well of maintenance, refurbishment, and strengthening. In one service, it has come up as a big challenge around the issue of water. The scarcity is becoming a challenge, Chair, because we do have lots of taps or extension of the service, but we do have less water going through. In terms of our effort, there's more taps, there's extended infrastructure, but the level of quality of service that we're actually able to provide In some other areas, there are taps without water coming out. So there is a challenge of looking at the whole value chain. Although we're looking at EDI today, Chair, one was just saying we may have to want to look at generation, transmission, and distribution as a whole line in how everything does. Because the previous time we actually did focus a lot around generation, but there are very important issues around transmission and distribution. On a separate point, the issue of energy efficiency. One was hoping to actually maybe raise that because it was an issue that was championed by the Deputy President, and we're looking at efficient use of electricity particularly. But the other issues which relate to challenges linked to energy efficiency, I think the issue of illegal connections did come up. There's also a big issue around cable theft. Further, when you go to communities, you do actually pick up there's issue relating to poor communities or what we may call indigence program, which relates to a point of affordability of electricity for those who actually are poor. It does actually link to the issue of the free basic service. So I'm just saying, as that category of issues, we may want to get sense on how we're actually managing that. But also the point relating to the billing system, because largely there's issue of those who are able to hide behind the poor people who can pay but do not pay for services. I think it does actually become a very important issue. That's why one may raise those issues as part of the challenges when we want to ensure efficient energy efficiency in terms of use. Issues of illegal connection, cable theft, indigent program, free basic service, and the issue of billing are quite important to be considered moving forward. I would actually want to just also, Chair, give an example of RED 1, which is actually the one that includes the city of Cape Town. We do have a team from the EDI in the current CEO of NERSA, the employee communications from COCTA, and I think there will be another person presenting later, Mr. Lowe, later today, who's also the employee of former employee of the EDI. So one was actually hoping to look at a point of ensuring that those people who come from the sector be encouraged to stay in the sector because we think they can actually add a lot of value and help. The other point is just around ring fencing. There has been lots of work that was done in terms of ring fencing where the business of electricity has been actually put together, coordinated in a way that each municipality have good sense of what the electricity business is all about. But maybe the final point on the opening comments, Chair, is around the issue of what we called REDS Forum, the Regional Electricity Distribution Forums, where we had municipalities and ESCOM working together. Those platforms are not actually being convened or facilitated. So one was hoping to actually use this opportunity in the portfolio committee to say it will add a lot of value if we can be able to look at those REDS Forum in a way of sustaining them. We can call them any name, it doesn't matter. It does actually contribute, and because it has before, and it will still contribute much more in terms of planning and coordination between municipalities and ESCOM. In terms of maybe issues of reference, largely one wanted to say the issue of recruitment of competent resources still remain an issue moving forward. The issue of developing a comprehensive understanding of the electricity distribution industry, we think it's still very valid, but the establishment of performance baseline in terms of future benchmark is another issue that we think is important. But in the overall, we think there will be minimum standards that we'll have to look at in terms of performance of these assets. The development of developing of solution and business models, which could lead to a sustainable EDI, because the six rates were undermining the provincial boundaries. It was actually put together as economic models, which actually have identified six areas out of the nine provinces nationally being sustainable and being able to be operated in a way that it's able to actually ensure that the quality of service and standard is sustained. The establishment of the stakeholder engagement structures is referring to the point I raised earlier of the rates forum. EDI Holdings facilitated the ring fencing in terms of ESCOM distribution and 57 municipalities in preparation for the consolidation. We hope most of the municipalities do understand their electricity business by now. There is actually a point of Adam. It was actually raised earlier. And I think the contribution from COCTA in terms of MISA, working from the level where we at in terms of the infrastructure approach, is actually going to be very, very complementary and helpful. Based on the research work by the EDI, I think we want to actually just say the EDI currently generating revenue. However, the business model is not sustainable. In terms of just the electricity distribution industry, we think if we don't actually have a sense of resources being sustained, we might actually face a bit of a challenge. Number of good performers are decreasing at a rapid pace. We're looking at municipalities, but there might be other areas in terms of areas within ESCOM. There is not sufficient investment in the EDI infrastructure. I think that has come up earlier. The skills and resources are in many instances not available to ensure effective asset management. The major challenge in the recruitment, training, and retention of the skills. Well, one actually having been exposed to the local government CETA, I have actually picked up that in the little resources that have been made available from the LG CETA, most of the resources is people who actually undergo training looking for new jobs. And for those actually who are employed in the municipalities, when you avail skills development and training, they do try and train for the jobs that they hope to get. They're not actually trying to improve themselves in terms of what they're doing. So there are actually issues where we might think we're investing only to find that the resources are going to something which does not relate to what we have to deliver as we speak. Technology is not effectively used to enhance performance, and the EDI is underperforming measure against the realistic industry standards. So I'm just saying that, you know, overall we do actually find that the figures that were raised in terms of rehabilitation, I will leave to the point of number of years, but I know we're coming very close to 50 in terms of age of infrastructure. And on the other side, how much per annum, when we don't actually respond, we may be increasing in terms of backlog. There might be a small difference in terms of numbers. But at the point I'd like to confirm is that the EDI infrastructure performance is getting worse. But the point here as well, one would like to raise is that for generation, we did actually have a lot of what we might have talked about as load shedding. So some of the issues that might be coming through to at this stage may be closer to what you may think is load shedding, when it's distribution that is actually not sustaining itself over time. The ring fencing and benchmarking work done by the EDI holding indicate that small percentage of EDI asset owners are increasing their investment in the assets. Some municipalities are doing quite well to reinvest in terms of what the EDI assets are actually generating. But in majority, the cases of the investment shortfall is significant and growing. The infrastructure conditions calls for urgent national intervention. Hopefully, we hope, Chair, in terms of conclusion, that without an urgent infrastructure rehabilitation intervention in South Africa is heading for a disaster from the EDI perspective. I'm just saying this will be better than generation. If you think generation was bad, this will be better if we actually don't respond. ADAM presents an outstanding base to start from to introduce a national asset turnaround initiative. Well, obviously, the point of MISA does actually help us not to say reinvention of the wheel, because we think there's lots of good information. We can work from that base in terms of work done around the infrastructure. Technology options are available to assist in improving the performance of the EDI. The other point is that in closing of EDI Holding as a state-owned company, it left a vacuum, and the focus which was created in managing the EDI more effectively is rapidly disappearing. The example, Chair, which I'd like to state and want to raise as an appeal is of the RAID Forum. I think if we can agree and get support to almost resuscitate and sustain them, it may actually be quite important. Use any name, it doesn't have to be RAID Forum, but I think they will add a lot of value. The infrastructure situation can be rescued from an urgent intervention. The cooperation of all key industry players, and by leveraging the existing stakeholder structures and institutions, which may include the RAID Forum. Chair, I think one will actually stop at that point, but just to say, at the side of the EDI Holding, the opportunity that was given did actually help us a great deal, because even RAID 1 initiative, although it was not actually concluded, did actually help a great deal to change, particularly the city of Cape Town, to a level of operation that's much better than what we might have had over time. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks very much, Falongosi, and I trust EFCOM would share with us when they make inputs around their experiences on the RAID Forum. Now we have the AMEU. Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson.
If you could just pronounce your surname.
It's Michael Rode.
Oh, Rode, not Rode. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, members. Chairperson, in the interest of accommodating everybody's social life, I've re-strategized my presentation. Many of the things that were said this morning is covered in my presentation, if you had a look at it. So the view that all the parties had shared earlier is the same view that we hold. And I can go through the presentation, but I think the more important thing is the key issues. That was part of your brief, to talk about the key issues for consideration when you look at it in industry. But maybe just by introduction, Chair, I just want to say the AMEU, where we come from, we've been established in 1950. We've got membership of, we heard this morning, there's 187 municipalities. Most municipalities are members of the AMEU. In fact, we've got the membership of 98 municipalities. And each municipality has a councillor and an engineer member on the committee. We provide technical support to SALGA. We've been involved in the EDI restructuring process since 1992, up to 2011, and we are fully supporting the RAID model. We understood that there is a need to restructure the industry. It could never carry on in the way that it has been, and it obviously it had come as a shock to us when the project was called off. Just an history, an overview of the industry. Since 1882, there's been distribution industry started out in Kimberley, and there's 187 licensed, heard this morning, 188 in fact, licensed municipalities. And the different municipalities vary in size, we've also heard that this morning, and also correspondingly in income and expenditure. And the problems within the industry is well documented, and some of it was said throughout the day. But, Chairperson, the following couple of slides deals with the view that we say, and as I said, we have heard all this morning, and I hate to bore you, so what I want to go do is go to a slide that I have just inserted, as I said, in the interest of accommodating some social life, a slide at the back that hones in on the key issues for for consideration. And as the previous speaker had said that there is, and you might not have the slide, it's a new slide that I have put in from the board chair, if I may. The previous speaker has said that the restructuring or the halting of the restructuring process has left a major gap in the industry. We all know, if we're honest with ourselves, that many municipalities had held up, or rather did not invest in the infrastructure because of the coming rates, and they've rather channeled funding to other services, water and related services. So you can imagine our shock when the project was called off. Now we have to pick up the infrastructure that has been left barren for a while. So the key issues from our point of view for consideration, Chair, is the infrastructure maintenance and refurbishment. I heard a lot about this morning. Now, NERSA had, in the maintenance summit of 2008, there was a figure thrown around of 5% of revenue must be reinvested into maintenance of your assets. Some other figures were quoted here this morning. I know NERSA has revised that to 6%. I've also heard a figure of 7 to 8%. Now, there was discussion about this, and many municipalities does not do that. Now, I'm saying that considerably because the AMU are very at that level where we have a lot of focus on municipalities and we understand what's happening. As I said, 98 of the 188 members or municipalities are members of the AMU. So there is a 5%, and NERSA, if I'm not mistaken, had identified the 5% to be a license condition. Now, we can't understand why NERSA does not enforce the 5%. I mean, many municipalities, I've been in many, and the figure that I've come across is about 3%. And 3% is hopelessly, you know, is not enough for us to pick up this industry. So I'm saying that we're saying that NERSA should enforce the 5% and bring some sort of penalties or punishment into municipalities that don't provide for the 5%. Refurbishment, this we do on capital, and within municipalities there's never enough capital to properly refurbish our infrastructure. There's a lot of things we need to do. We need to just not only refurbish but also to extend our infrastructure to accommodate development in our towns, and very often there's not enough funding for it. And we actually welcome the MISA initiative that came out this morning, and hope that some of those funding can be channeled through to municipalities. On electrification funding, DOE provides funding to municipalities for electrification, and what we have found is that ESCOM gets actual connection fees while municipalities does not. We get a fraction of the connection fees, and that presents a problem. In smaller municipalities, this problem is more manifest because many times it's not capacity internal to do the designs of electrification projects. So these municipalities has to call in consultants, which take about 15 to 18% of the funding that was provided to the municipality, and as a result, you know, you cannot get up onto your conditions that you set out to do for smaller municipalities. In larger municipalities, it's different because there is in-house capacity to do that. Theft of electricity and copper, we've spoken about this morning. It is becoming a serious problem. Some municipalities have reported up to 34 million to prevent copper theft in a year. Now that's a substantial amount. That's not even factoring in the 20 million or 22 million that you have to fork out to reinstate the problem areas. Of course, coupled to this is the whole issue of illegal wiring. It's a problem, and it's a contravention of the bylaws. And we find often there's not a political will to address this. Many municipalities and engineers set out to go talk to the communities and get the communities buy-in into just making the area safe, but we find that there's not enough support for removal of illegal wiring. Recruitment and retention of staff, this is also a serious problem. Smaller municipalities have the bigger problem because, as was said this morning, that these guys cannot recruit professional staff into the municipalities, and they make use of consultants most of the time. The other problem for bigger municipalities is retention of staff. Now, many big municipalities, metros and some big municipalities, give a scarcity allowance Now these things are not regulated, and one municipality gives 30%, another gives 10%. And what happens, you just find that staff move from the 10% to the 30%, and it's a better deal, they move to another municipality. So that defeats the object, and we as an association believe that maybe there should be some sort of legislation or rules around what the scarcity allowance should be in order not to have staff move around, you know, chasing money. Training of staff has become a serious challenge. We find that in municipalities, of the 1% of funding that are allowed or used for training, many of those funds are channeled to the other services, support services, you know, supply chain issues and administrative issues, and very few gets pumped back into the infrastructure related departments. And we as the AMU has approached the CETAs for funding, but we also find that they have challenges in providing the funding readily into the industry to train staff and get staff, you know, to get out there and maintain or refurbish the infrastructure properly. And we take courage in DOE's effort. I've noticed that towards the end of last year, DOE had advertised for some staff that had recently qualified, and with the intention of placing them in some municipalities to get the experiences. The problem with that is that once these people have experiences, smaller municipalities cannot take them up because they started to get used to a salary, and the smaller municipalities just cannot afford to match that kind of salary. The cross-boundary supplies is becoming a problem increasingly, and again we've heard some of this morning. This is where other municipalities and ESCOM feed into a particular municipality. In my area where I am, there's two municipalities and ESCOM feeding into my area or into my license area. And the problem is there that across the street you might find somebody paying a tariff and on the other side of the street a person pays another tariff. Apart from that, the service levels in terms of responding to streetlight faults, responding to cable faults, responding to faults is disparate. ESCOM has a certain strategy, municipalities have a different strategy, and the community become irritated with that kind of approach or the disparate service. We've heard a lot about tariffs this morning, and the IBT is presenting a big problem. I've heard Mirza in their presentation earlier say that municipalities can come to me. It's not that easy out there, because Mirza will publish a guideline tariff, and many municipalities will be under pressure to apply those tariffs. Now, if you don't agree with the tariff, you need to go up to NERSA and do presentations, and again, in the smaller municipalities, there's no capacity or even funding to appoint a consultant or tariff expert to go put their case forward. So they just apply the tariff and then incur losses. You know, the IBT, some of the municipalities in our society that belongs to the association have reported if they had gone IBT route, they would lose money to the tune of 200 million. Now that is clearly unsustainable for any municipality to lose that kind of money. Also, in a study that we've done on tariffs, we've looked at the trajectory. If tariffs carry on the way they do, where ESCOM gets an increase of 27% and municipalities get 19% soon, and we've determined in about 6 years, you will find that your sales and purchases is 1-to-1. In other words, the municipality will then have to carry the cost of distribution, which again is unsustainable. So one needs to look at tariffs and the cost effectivity of it. Supply chain management processes. We have found that since these things are now centralized, and it's obviously because of legislation, things are very slow. You cannot move as fast as previously, and we understand why it's there to sort of curb corruption, etc. But we feel as an association that maybe one should look at these processes to make it more flexible in order for us to deliver on our mandate and to give an effective service. We also find that because it's centralized, from the electricity department or other departments, water, etc., have very little say in what finally gets purchased. So what you often find is that poor quality material gets purchased because they're the cheapest or they score the highest points. These things then get applied onto the network, and issues with many failures eventually. In revenue collection, many municipalities, again, also the smaller municipalities, battle with collecting of all their revenue. And we believe that there need to be some intervention or support to these municipalities in order for them to collect all the revenue. Then license conditions, there are many license conditions, and some of these conditions are captured in what we call NRA specifications drawn up between AMU, ESCOM, and industry players. And many municipalities also does not have the capacity or does not comply to those license conditions, and it really comes back down to a capacity problem within the municipalities. So they just carry on, keep their hand on the network, but many of the specifications that are out there that speak to best practices and etc. are not complied to. So, Chair, in summary, we believe those are the key issues for consideration, and again, we say that we have supported the restructuring of the industry, and we still believe that there is a place to restructure the industry. And many of these things, we believe, will disappear in a new restructured industry. And thank you, Chair. That's my...
Thank you very much, Mr. Roden. You've really provoked a lot of thinking. I wish I would have time to comment on your input. So quite helpful. You must thank Dr. Philip Lloyd. He's the one who recommended me to invite you here. So networking, honorable member, is beginning to help because his inputs are really, as far as I'm concerned, opening some areas which we were not led to. Viva Eskom, viva. Zayand, Zandren, Zakuma.
Chairman, ndiyabulela kakhulu inkosi molweni kuni nonke this afternoon. Honorable Chair and honorable members of the committee and also colleagues from the industry and partners in crime, I greet all of you in the name of partnership and collaboration. Chairman, I would just like to first start by just responding to a couple of points that were raised earlier, just for completeness. I think the first question there was a question that you asked, Honorable Chair, which related to the funding of the FETs. And I just wanted to share with the House very briefly and quickly that from an ESCOM point of view, we actually have supported the FETs. We have funded the FETs to the tune of 15.5 million rand or thereabouts. And it's all across the provinces. I've got the details that are available. And we're actually starting to see some fruit from those from that kind of investment where we get people coming in for on-job training and that. So it's a very positive, initiative and a positive step, which we are seeing a lot of benefits or fruits coming out of that. And the second point, Pat, I suppose the other point, I will try and pick them up with the presentation so that I can also, save the committee some time. Because a number of the points that I'm going to be touching on have already been covered in terms of the presentation. But really there are three key elements that I want to deal with in my presentation. If you look at my next slide, just the one that talks about our business and how it's structured, this one showing it in a different angle. If you look at those four, I actually would like to lump them in terms of the key message really that I want to leave with the committee this afternoon. The first really is to talk about the fact that ESCOM is a regulated business. I think we need to be very clear that it's regulated, it is ring-fenced, and it is a licensed business by NERSA. Now, the issue of licensing, I think there are a number of points that have been raised, one from SAUGA and just recently AMEU, has talked about the areas of supply. Now, our understanding is that we are the licensed service authority, not the service provider, as it was said this morning. And let me just give you an example to show what that means. If you look at the arrangement that Mangaung has with Centlink, Centlink is the service provider and Mangaung is a service authority. If you look at City Power, another example, they are the service provider on behalf of the city of Johannesburg. Now, if you say that Eskom is a service provider on behalf of whom would be the question. So we understand that our role, as we are licensed by the regulator, is clearly that of a service authority in our area of supply, and that, you know, as a regulated business, we are very clear in terms of how NERSA makes allowance for the monies that we are allowed to charge the customers in terms of the tariff. When the regulator did the presentation earlier, they spoke about what the composition of that tariff is. And the composition of the tariff basically is what I showed there on the slide, the generation, the transmission, the distribution, which is basically the wire component. And then also you charge the customers for the energy that they use. You charge them for administration. And then, of course, you allow for some return on your assets. So the point really there is that when we look at the whole issue of the license, the service delivery agreements, and so on and so forth, I wouldn't like to leave the committee confused in terms of that, in terms of our understanding, because this is the other side of the coin. And Chairman, also, let me just, on a probably tongue-in-cheek, say that I think it was a year and a bit ago that I met with the AMEU to talk specifically about this issue, where we were asked, as Eskom, to sign a service delivery agreement with the municipalities, and we couldn't really agree on that point because we were saying that we are a service authority. So on what basis do we then sign the service delivery agreement? Chairman, you spoke about Adam and Eve this morning, when you were hearing a lot about Adam and Eve, and I think at that meeting, and this is where the tongue-in-cheek comes in, I did actually say to the MEU, I feel a little bit like Eve. And the story goes like this. We are both, when I say we, Eskom and the municipalities are both the children of the same parents, the government. The only difference is that we've got different line ministries that we report to. Now, in our case as Eskom, we are the female child, and therefore we're not the heir. And because we're not the heir, you know, we can't inherit the wealth of that has been created by our common parent, then we are asked to sign the service delivery agreement. So, Chair, that was my argument with the MEU, that we are all really service providers that should be focusing on service delivery and making sure that we deliver to the customers that we have out there so that we are able to achieve the benefits and the infrastructure development that has been talked about in the State of the Nation address. The other point I really just want to talk to Chairman is the distribution infrastructure from an Eskom perspective. Recently we have restructured Eskom Chair, and the whole idea really was to say let us relook the whole Eskom as a business to look at what value are we bringing to our customers. But I think more so when we look at relooking our mandate as the distribution division, we said that we need to still look at separating the wires and the customers. So what you will find now at Eskom is that we've got in the distribution environment we've got a very focused wires business. And then we also have a separate customer services division, which then looks after the customer services issues. But most of all, we have also said that although EDI restructuring was canned in 2010 at the end of December, the industry issues are still there, and somebody has to deal with the industry issues. And who better placed to deal with them but the industry captains that are already there and who have been interacting on the subject. So in our mandate, we said it's very important that we keep that national interest by having this active partnering, which I'm going to be talking about a little bit later, which is really to say we still have to resolve the industry issues even in the absence of the EDI restructuring. I'm not going to deal too much with the asset base. You can see the numbers are there in terms of what we have, 4.7 million customers in the whole of the country, and the balance are, of course, serviced by the municipalities. Electrification is a subject that is talked about a lot, so it is really important for us to just see where we are in terms of our performance on electrification. And also there you can see what the critical challenges are in our environment, safety performance, technical performance, which has been talked about. We've spoken about energy theft, illegal connections, and that sort of thing. Electrification also, you know, is a big focus area for distribution. I'm also not going to spend too much time there. We've already spoken about the 27 billion rand backlog. But on the next slide, really, what I want to emphasize there is that from an ESCOM point of view, we have really, I suppose, one of the advantages that we have is that we don't have water to be concerned about. We don't have roads and sewage to be concerned about. So we are able then to reinvest the money that we get in our infrastructure. And generally, we find that the distribution infrastructure is generally in a very good condition. We do have pockets of excellence, and we also have pockets of, you know, a lot of challenges. And I will show you a little bit later on in the slides what are the key drivers for us to change our maintenance philosophies and that. But you can also see that in the next 6 years, we're going to be spending 68 billion rand on capital expenditure, and of that, 14.5 will be dedicated just to refurbishment. One of the things that we do regularly as ESCOM is to benchmark ourselves internationally to see how we compare with other utilities of similar nature or utilities of in the first world countries, because that is what we aspire to be or where we aspire to be. We compare ourselves, and then we see in terms of the investment that we are doing in our infrastructure, is it sufficient? And the studies that we have done have actually shown that we are lagging behind as well, and we need to spend about 1.5 billion rand on refurbishment only for the next 10 years for us to be able to catch up. So the essence really of this slide is that over the last 20 years, we've really grown our infrastructure. You can see the numbers of electrification. We've grown a number of, quite a lot. We've also looked at our preventative maintenance in relation to our corrective maintenance, and especially on the LV side, what we have been doing I would say before the last 5 years was to actually run the plant to failure, and we basically respond as and when the fault happens. We realized that that is not sustainable. We changed our LV philosophy to say we really need to increase our preventative maintenance. Low voltage maintenance, and that is basically where your 400-volt network is. And we said we need to be more proactive and do more of preventative maintenance rather than just responding to, the network collapsing at that point. But generally also you will see that our maintenance plans are 95% completed. In other words, if you look at our maintenance that is planned, 95% of it is done, which is actually a very good number. What is really driving our maintenance? As I've said, our low voltage maintenance philosophy has changed, so we are doing a lot of proactive maintenance. If you look at our electrification connections, we also have a lot of customers that we've added onto our network, and therefore that is driving the need to look after those customers and their wires, the refurbishment backlog that I've spoken about. But the other important part in this equation is that, you know, as you grow the number of customers, you need to be able to be close enough to their centers to be able to respond quick enough. And one of the ways we are dealing with that is to build more technical services centers, which is basically those technical units that are there to respond to the faults that happen on the network. So we spent a lot of money, we're going to be spending a lot of money creating those infrastructure to make sure that we are able to meet the customer requirements in those areas that are far away as we move more and more into the deep rural areas. This second part of my presentation, Chair, really deals with the active partnering concept. This slide, what is in this slide really has been dealt with extensively, but the message that I want to leave with you today really is that we still acknowledge that in the absence of EDI restructuring, as I said earlier, we still have to deal with the industry issues. We have seen a number of service delivery protests, which are really a big concern to the whole country. And we're saying that we need a mechanism or a model where we can continue dealing with the service, industry issues. And DOE has already said that they've got a plan that they are putting together, which is going to be looking at different stages in terms of the rehabilitation of the infrastructure. And we have restructured ourselves in Eskom, as I've said, and the way that we've restructured, particularly in the distribution environment, is such that we've got nine, we moved from the current six regions or the current six red model, and we've moved to nine provinces. So as I speak now, we've got nine provincial units where we've got general managers who look after those particular customers in their area of supply. But further also, if you look at, and maybe I should just go to the map, if you look further into the way that we have structured, we've looked at the whole of the country and we've said in a province, if you look at a province, how can we rearrange ourselves in such a way that we've got zones, which will basically be a number of these customer centers where we can have a number of those reporting in a particular zone and also really giving focused attention to the customers in those particular zones so that we make sure that the zone managers are empowered to deal with all the issues that come out of their particular areas of responsibility. And in our structures also, we've made sure that we've got what we call industry support and liaison functions so that we can start dealing with the issues that emanate from the industry challenges. So we are capacitating ourselves to make sure that we are able to support the active partnering concept that we have coined in ESCOM. Basically, what that active partnering concept really is saying is that in the absence of EDI restructuring, let us perhaps look at the structures that Mr. Nkosi spoke about earlier. He spoke about revising the red forums. You know, we're looking at those kinds of structures to revise them so that we're able to continue dealing with the industry issues. But we also need to have an industry vision. So it requires a lot of interaction from our side to make sure that we can really deal with those issues of the industry. The key message for us is that we are geared up to doing that. We are structured and we are resourcing ourselves to make sure that we can deal with those challenges that are still there in the distribution industry. The last point, Chair, that I would like to deal with really talks about what actually has happened, you know, in the last couple of years where we have had gaps in terms of service delivery. We were approached by COCTA, I think it was about 2 years ago or thereabouts, where they asked us to, come up with some solutions or some offerings that we can put on the table to support vulnerable municipalities. We are working on this through our ministry, the DPE, where we have put together a proposal in terms of what we can give to what we can offer to the municipalities. Some of the services or offerings that we are talking about in this Adopt a Municipality initiative, they talk to the technical skills development. As some of you may know, we do have quite a strong technical training base in ESCOM. The accreditation of authorized people, authorized operators, we can actually give that support, and we do it in certain cases where it is required. the pricing and tariff structure, in other words, how we can help the municipalities, especially those that find themselves struggling with the tariffs and designing the tariffs, that is something else that we are able to offer. In fact, at Centlec, I believe as early as last year, we actually have offered this service to them, and they are looking at you know, how best they can use the information that we have provided so that they can design their tariffs better. Energy losses management, contact center access, you know, those are the types of services that we can give. Basically, they cover your wire side, they cover the customer services side. They also look at the billing and the and contact center environment. And it is something that Eskom is able to, you know, to continue offering to the municipalities, particularly those that are really struggling and vulnerable. The other point you asked, Chair, that I cover is, you know, what are the critical things that we learned out of the restructuring environment? Fortunately, the red one that was talked about earlier, and I was also involved in setting up and you know, everything that was happening around red one. And what we learned here is that those forums that Mr. Nkosi spoke about were really very useful. We used the forums for a number of streams. We had the wire stream, we had the retail stream, we also had a stream that was looking at finances, we had a stream that was looking at systems. So it actually helped to look at the standards that we currently have in the industry to make sure that we can find opportunities to converge some of those standards. So on the technical side, we had a number of work groups that were looking at a number of areas, such as the asset creation processes, such as you know, the investment processes, and we tried as far as possible to streamline the processes in that environment. So there were a lot of benefits that we reaped you know, across the board. I think the other opportunity is around the electrification, and perhaps before I forget, there were other issues that were raised around electrification. I think SAGA may have expressed the concern that in the areas where they do not have a license, and Eskom has a license to supply, they find there is a challenge in terms of delivering electrification. Now, electrification, as you know, we are an implementing agent for the DOE, number one. And secondly, when we do electrification, we always work with the municipalities on the integrated development plans. So those IDPs, they inform where we electrify and how we electrify, and DOE will then give us the funding for that. In some cases where the municipalities are not able to do the electrification, there is an arrangement in terms of the funding to make sure that that funding is given to Eskom, where Eskom is able to execute and deliver that electrification. And I believe that that fund, those funds are called Schedule 7, and I'm speaking under called 6 or 7, yes. I think ours is 7, yes. So we do have access to that. So we can always assist where it is possible. All we need to do really is to sit down and talk about these issues and see where the challenges are. There is an asset creation framework which was developed by the DOE, which is the basis for how we can do electrification in terms of standardization, the technical designs, and so on and so forth. So those things are available, and we do do the electrification in those cases, and we get the funding from the DOE. So, Chairman, really, I think the key message for me, I have really summarized, there has been a lot of work that has been done. The challenges are there. We do see it through the service delivery protests. And what we really need to do as the industry captains, partners, and collaborators is just to really make sure that we push forward and we make the active partnering much alive than it currently is. You know, we need to put something on the table. In fact, I do recall that one of the last meetings that we had with EDI Holdings before they closed down was to say that let us go and experiment. You know, we need to do something tangible so that when we come here to the committee chair, we actually talk about the successes. Isn't this the level that's bigger at Dufflane, in Mpumelelo? So that you can see that, you know, something really positive can be done in this partnership. And I would say that that is probably our challenge, you know, as the industry experts, to go out there and to do something, to put it on the table, and to say that here is something that we have delivered. It can be done, even though the EDI restructuring in the formal way that it was put forward, it hasn't worked. But the work can actually still be done because the service delivery is still an issue. Dr. Chairman, I will leave it at this point and also thank again yourself and the committee members for the opportunity to present here, and we will take questions when the time comes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sayanda. Just safe to say that really one input after another, we're learning things, you know, relations and or working relations between ESCOM and municipalities. Honourable members, as they say, we need to have a hawk's eye on it. You know, it's good that ESCOM was open and honest, and we're going to take up that matter very, very seriously. I'm lobbying my honourable members now. The challenge of public image, you left it, ESCOM, powerful and meaningful and well-meaning as it may be. At times, you're not that popular. You're not popular in my constituency in Orange Farm. You're not popular at all. Although there are challenges from the residents as well, honorable members, bridging, theft, and other things. But, you know, well, of course, they say two wrongs cannot make a right. And also, I want to put it on record. I'm going to share with you a correspondence I got from one of the service providers complaining about ESCOM's lackluster approach to training. You say you've got a strong training base. I'm not saying it's an overall thing, but it's good to just get those kind of things. It's sitting on my email. Sorry, I should have shared that with Mr. Damis long ago. Yeah, it's very important that also, whilst you may be having a very good model on training, you know, also take up those things. We don't know. They may end up subtly expanding. You see it when I share it with you. Now, sorry, I've just turned upside down my where's my agenda? Yeah? Oh, National Treasurer, the money people. Over to you, ladies.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll take us through the first part, and my colleague Wendy Fanu will take us through the second part. We've been listening, Chair, attentively.
Which means Ms.
Moore, yes.
Oh.
We've been listening this morning to the discussions, and we did change our presentation to try and address some of the issues raised. Not to go into too much detail, but for us to meet our obligations in terms of service delivery, it is very important that we balance the resources of the municipality, the grants from national government, as well as the ability of municipalities to borrow money to repay for investments made through user charges. This balance is made easier to municipalities because of resources from national government for free basic services, which is largely or completely paid through the equitable share, largely impacted on by the amount of poor households. But just to indicate, we are also sensitive to the broader environment. So when the electricity bulk prices increased in 2010-11, the budget for 20 that year was adjusted by just under 7 billion rand to make sure that the free basic services are able to keep up with the additional cost to the municipality. To make this balance work, it is important that the funds available are then spent on providing for maintenance and providing new infrastructure. So the idea is we look after the poor through the national government, but the tariffs paid by users must ensure that we provide the new infrastructure and that we maintain the existing infrastructure that is put in place. Obviously, you must also then balance what is the targeted indigent households and ensure that you properly target those. And I think that some people have raised that, and that it is clear who is cross-subsidizing, so that it's an explicit policy as opposed to something that nobody's quite sure who's being cross-subsidized or by who they are subsidized. So just graphically, this is the picture: the municipal own revenue, so rates and taxes and service charges that can be supported through municipal borrowing, and then on the other side, the transfers, which is direct transfers, the equitable share transfers, national conditional grants, the integrated electricity grant, as well as in the other grants that support municipalities. There are grants that look for financial management and grants that try to build capacity in municipalities. And then it's in the interface of these two that we can develop the budgets for municipalities and ensure that we spend those on the relevant areas. Chair, there's been a lot said about the fiscal, local government fiscal framework. I think that graph shows us the local government fiscal framework story. It grows significantly. It has grown since 2006-07, largely fueled by equitable share increases, but also significantly by increases to conditional grants and then the share of the fuel levy that goes to municipalities. What has not been discussed this morning is the ability to spend. The municipal grant that goes for the electrification of households has been underspent to the tune of nearly 400 million rand in 2010-11. So we're looking at expenditure trends of 65% of total allocated money. The policy reforms to ensure that we support local government through proper fiscal reforms has led to the municipal budget and reporting regulations being put out so that there is clarity in terms of the revenues received as well as the expenditure. A lot of people have been speaking about ring fencing. Basically, this will ensure that through proper budgeting and reporting, we are able to understand the municipal budgets for electricity, providing clarity on allocations in terms of what comes from national, but also when it gets paid over, so there's certainty in budgets, which does allow municipalities to go to the market as well. And then, as we said, improve the monitoring of those budgets. There's also, as I indicated earlier, targeted capacity support. There's been support from the National Treasury for this budgeting and planning. We have spoken about the Sianza Manji project earlier, where there's been significant allocations made towards hands-on support to municipalities. And as I said, there are other conditional grants that try to help with financial management and capacity. There are now additional programs, as you know, through the Department of Cooperative Governance. Three major issues needs to be addressed. The first is that the budgets of the municipalities needs to be realistic. When you don't properly budget for the expenditures you have for a year and you start depleting on your cash reserves, the municipality's ability to react to requirements on the budget is weakened. If we do not price our services well, we were talking earlier about that electricity is used for a revenue source. If we properly price all the services, this is no longer needed. So there is a need for proper pricing, like provided for the MFMA. And also, what are the projections in terms of the revenue that will be received? Sometimes we overproject on the revenue that will be brought in, and I'll give you some numbers soon about that. Operating expenditure is too high, and sometimes it's spent on areas where that is not critical, that's not critical to delivery, and that needs to be understood. And sometimes we over budget for capital budgets in terms of what we think we are going to be achieving. Obviously, the maintenance of assets is what we have to discuss today. The skills issue has been raised in terms of ensuring that we've got the proper qualified engineers and technicians, but also managers. Asset management systems is a very weak area, which basically starts spilling over into the budgeting, into the provisions made for maintenance. So it's critical that the asset management systems are addressed initially, and that will help a lot in terms of future maintenance. What is also concerning is the cost of reactive maintenance or emergency maintenance is a lot higher than preventative maintenance. So if we have a proper schedule where there's ongoing preventative maintenance, it reduces that 27 billion starts becoming doable if we don't just react to a crisis. I just want to raise with the committee their own funding for capital budgets. There is a need to address the over-reliance on national transfers for capital budgets. The current capital budgets of municipalities are not being spent. If we look at the total outcome that was sent to this House in the end of September 2011, the under expenditure in municipalities on capital budgets was 12 billion rand. Of that, specifically for electricity, the under expenditure was 1.4 billion. And this is not a phenomenon that we can say it's because of municipalities with small weak capacities or rural municipalities. We have large municipalities like Ekurhuleni who was unable to spend 33% of their capital budget. So I think a lot of the talk today has been about, we need to get money to the problem. I think what the Treasury is trying to say is the money is here. We need to find better ways to spend it. This is an indication of what worries us when people speak about the fiscal framework for municipalities. The more we pay, which is the red line, is capital transfers received by municipalities, the less the municipality budgets, which is the dotted line that goes down. You can see it significantly starts reducing in 2019. So it just shifts the responsibility for users of municipal services to the taxpayers, and that is an unsustainable situation where we're going to find ourselves, already we find ourselves that municipalities' own contribution have now reduced to less than 50% of the capital expenditure in municipalities. So it's very critical, as I said earlier, that we try and reassert the balance of the responsibility towards payment. There are some other points that I'd just like to quickly raise. The revenue value chain should be complete, ensure that billing is done, accuracy of billing, ability to collect revenue is important. What we currently see is the total owed to municipalities as of December 2010 was 62.3 billion. That is our total problem solved if we can start addressing the revenue collection problems. The setting of tariffs, Wendy is going to go into some detail around that, so I'm not going to talk to that now. But we do need to understand that maintenance might be something that you can cut corners on without creating too much political hoo-ha. But in the end, it costs the country dearly, and that we must be very careful about how we deal with this matter. Just shortly, the ability, we've spoken about the fiscal side and the municipality side, but we also indicated that you must balance this with borrowing. If we look at the red and the black, that is the growth expenditure or capital expenditure, as well as the rehabilitation expenditure. Now, that is, as I indicated, what should be paid from tariffs. So there is a lot of capacity in all levels of municipality to borrow for capital investment, which they can pay off as people use the service. However, if you look at the graph below, we can see that the loan contribution as a percentage of funding is reducing and has gone down from 24% in 2006-07 to only 20%. And you can see in by 2010 we are buying more money from a funding than that we are from borrowing. So the two trends, as I say, the one trend saying we're borrowing less, the other trend saying that we're using less municipal revenue, are the concerning trends, and then secondly that we are seeing that the money that are being allocated are not being spent. The matters that was raised around that we must be ensure that we understand what is our indigent registered, and that we ensure that the funds that we allocate through the free basic services actually reach the indigent households. We just wanted to indicate the changes. The numbers are a bit old, but what we have as of 2009 is that our total percentage of households who receive free basic services as a percentage of total households using electricity is now at 35%. So that is very large. It differs in the municipalities from Free State being the highest to KwaZulu-Natal being the lowest. But I think the numbers start showing that we might not be in control of this policy and not have our fingers on the pulse in terms of ensuring it gets to the right people and that it doesn't get to the wrong people, I think is the important thing. I've indicated that the capital expenditure is down, so I'm not going to go into too much of that. Just the last side from my side is Chair, the losses on the network that is because of theft or because of illegal connections is really high in certain municipalities. You can see Imalahleni is up to 30% of their distribution is not collected, and I think the general trend there is that we see growth in this, and that is obviously what we'd like to see turn around, so that there's less money lost in the system and more money collected. I'm going to ask my colleague to speak a bit to the tariffs, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. One of the issues raised today was also the issue and the relationship between municipal electricity tariffs and municipal surcharges. Also to basically just highlight a bit of what has been done in the past. One thing that's important is, and it was also mentioned with regard to the misalignment between the Eskom financial year and the municipal financial year. What is important is municipal financial year stretches from 1 July to 30 June, and of course the Eskom one is different. And so that is why there's provision made for that 3 months difference. The reason why a municipal tariff cannot be amended mid-year, there's a very specific provision in the Municipal Finance Management Act that actually prohibits a municipality to actually increase municipal tariffs mid-year. And it was introduced for very specific reasons, is that, the households also need certainty about what their budgets are going to be, because the last thing you want is for municipalities to recklessly spend, then run out of money and then just increase their tariffs or their property rates mid-year. So to actually bring in that stability in the system, and those rules just as much apply to national government and provinces as well. So that is one of the reasons why municipal tariffs can only commence on 1 July. But again, municipal budget process also needs to be understood. It's very important for municipalities to consult their communities, and that is why the specific deadlines also stipulated with regard to that consultation process. Because what municipalities do is they must submit their draft budgets to their municipal council by 31 March. What then happens, the municipal council then preliminary approves it, and what they then do is they go to their communities to consult on these things. And based on the feedback that they then get from their communities, they then adopt their final budget. It's a very important principle of how a country is structured and that consultation process that we actually manage from the bottom up. So that process, we've had substantial discussions with NERSA as well to ensure that we actually get this alignment done. And that is where it's important both NERSA as well as municipalities need to come to the party and realize that NERSA needs to work within certain deadlines and so must municipalities. So in our recent circular that we sent out to municipalities, we sent them quite a lot of them, by the way, but we sent them two circulars specifically related to the budget. And the one we send out during December, so that when they do their draft budgets, they already know what they need to take into account, and that is informed by the medium-term budget policy statement. And then after the budget is concluded, we actually send them their final circular to actually indicate to them what the allocations are, and that we do shortly after the budget process. So a new provision that we've actually built into that December circular to keep in mind that some of the concerns with nurses raised as municipalities don't submit their proposals in time to NERSA, which makes it impossible for them to meet the deadline of 15 March that's prescribed in the MFMA. We've added that provision that if a municipality submits the D form as well as all the required information to NERSA late, and that is not by January 2012, and municipalities also do not give their support in this process, they can make a proposal to the Minister of Finance to actually ignore that deadline of 15 March and instruct the municipality to actually provide the necessary support to NERSA. And, I mean, provisions like this is going quite a far way. It could go quite far to actually assist NERSA also with the regulatory process as well. Next slide. Then another thing that's also stipulated, again, just to say that we've had quite a lot of discussions with NERSA, and a lot of those things we actually put in our circulars to municipalities so that they know it's not just something that's coming from NERSA, it's just as much supported by national government as well. And this is just an extract out of the circular that we sent to municipalities. It even indicates that National Treasury supports the formula that's proposed by NERSA, and it actually even then just copies it. It also refers to the IBT. It was again today mentioned, and then we just indicate to municipalities when they develop it, they need to look at two things. Firstly, that it benefits the poor. Like Marissa said, a lot of cases these things do not target the poor. It actually targets the non-poor. And then we also need to look at the impact on the municipalities and ensure that it's affordable. Then another issue was also mentioned with regard to the municipal tariff and the municipal surcharges. In terms of the constitution, municipalities can actually levy a surcharge on any municipal service. And what a surcharge means is actually a tax on top of the tariff. So it's actually completely delinked from a municipal service. It is actually just used as a base to actually collect additional revenue. Municipalities have two sources of own revenue, or what we call general revenue, which they collect and they can use for services that's not tariff funded. It's easy to collect for water, it's easy to collect for electricity, it's easy to collect for things where you provide to an individual household and say, aha, here's your bill, now you pay. And then they've got what we refer to as a general revenue, and that funds things that you cannot link to an individual, and I've listed a few there, like municipal roads, street lighting, municipal recreation facilities. And if municipalities do not collect that through municipal surcharges, what they will do, they will need to increase their property rates, for example. Like Marissa also indicated in her presentation, that's definitely, you can't just balance the one against the other. There's much bigger underlying challenges for municipal owned revenue collection that needs to be addressed. A lot of municipalities, they do not put in place a proper municipal tariff for service. There's many municipalities that just take what they've collected last year and then just add a percentage increase. There's got absolutely no connection with what it actually costs to provide that service. And I'll touch a bit later on some of the regulatory reform budget work that we're doing that will actually assist in getting us there. But currently, the electricity tariff that NERSA approves do have provision for the surcharge, and they've stipulated around 12.5%. It's really just the really crazy municipalities that will go to 100%. There are a few outliners, and most probably what we need to do in the interim is to actually identify those municipalities and actually take corrective action. Because they're currently, what is important, and what we've learned very quickly in the process as well, is that if you want to regulate the surcharge, it will only be successful if you also regulate the tariff. Because if you don't regulate the tariff, but you regulate the surcharge, what will happen, they will just dump the cost into the tariff. So the first step that we need to get right is to get the electricity tariff regulations in place. And I know it didn't sound like this today, but NERSA has actually been doing a sterling job to actually make a lot of progress. Over time, the last 2 years or so, they've made substantial progress to improve their regulation of municipalities. That's actually, that's what the D-forms are actually doing. It is actually similar to the process that they apply to ESCOM, and it's quite comprehensive and it's quite detailed. That is a very good process to actually indicate and do that ring fencing that everyone is referring to that's so important, and it will also give a municipality a much better idea of what it will cost to provide a service. So what we need to do is, and that's a philosophy that National Treasury have, what we first do is get the regulation system in place, or the system in place. Then the second step that we then focus on is to get municipalities, or provinces for that matter, just to fill in the form. And then only after we got them to fill in the form, then we start focusing on the quality. You can't get it overnight. We took about 7 to 8 years to implement the budget reforms for provinces. And we started about 2-3 years ago with municipalities. And their systems are actually much more complex, so we will take that same amount of time. Maybe we've learned a few lessons, but really the focus needs to be done is first focus on compliance and then focus on getting municipalities to get credible information in that system, because you get actually sometimes huge nonsense when you actually get that information in. But the surcharge regulation is going to be quite complex, because keep in mind that you would get large electricity users that would say we want to pay absolutely no surcharge, it should be zero. Where you will get the municipality that would say this is we want to pay as much surcharges as possible. And what would really be, and it will be quite a lot of work that needs to be done. First, we need to get the electricity tariff sources out, but we also will need to understand what is happening with tariffs over time, because currently the tariffs are actually re-regulating themselves to a new level to take into account that there's quite a lot of generation capacity that needs to be rolled out. So the electricity tariffs over the last few years has gone up quite substantially, at least by 20% per annum, and that system first also needs to be stabilized so that you can actually do those cost impact assessments, because you need to get the right balance between what the customer can afford, what the industry wants, what individual sectors want, and also what municipalities want, but also what households can afford. That system is too flexible for us to actually get to a situation where we can actually start regulating the surcharges. But it's definitely something that's on our radar screen, and that's why we're monitoring also what NERSA is doing in quite a lot of detail. And electricity will be the first service that will, where norms and standards will be prescribed in terms of surcharges. Okay, then what we need to do, and it's, we always blame everyone, but everyone's to blame if something goes wrong. And what we need to actually focus on is what are the different roles that the key stakeholders need to play. And we've just listed what nationals should do, but also what municipalities should do. But we also need not, we must not duplicate what each other is doing. We must complement what each other are doing. With regard to national, there's three very important roles. And in the electricity sector, it's actually quite well advanced. The policy is quite put in place. There's quite a lot of policies that's in place. The implementation is still the challenge. Regulation has also been mentioned as a challenge. This is strengthening its regulation. But one of the key issues that's also mentioned with regard to support has also been highlighted as a huge concern. The proposal that ESCOM actually highlighted is actually one of the things that can actually look substantial benefits to actually get the rollout of infrastructure in place. So It's not unique to the electricity sector with regard to electricity. Eskom can assist poorer municipalities or smaller municipalities. But just as much, bigger municipalities can also support smaller municipalities. And that's why some of these initiatives that we've got, about two or three in the country, where municipalities actually jointly work together, such as Centlac, to actually enable that they can have a bigger map of provision and then provide electricity more cheaply, more cost effectively, and actually get the engineering skills in. Those are the type of initiatives, if we actually put that on scale, learn from the lessons and actually start replicating it in municipalities, that we can really start having benefits. And by the way, it's not just for electricity, the same applies for water, where water boards can also play a huge role to actually facilitate in the rollout. I mean, the figures that Marissa mentioned, the currently the expenditure on the electricity grant that goes directly to municipalities, which is a Schedule 6 grant, in 2010-11, 65% of the allocation was spent, 65%. Now, that means there's nearly 40% that's just laid idle and wasn't used. And who's the loser in the process? It's a poor household. So it's definitely something that needs to be addressed. And that is where capacity support is exceptionally important. And it's not necessarily just national. It could be broader than that as well. And there's quite a few initiatives in place. And most probably what needs to be done is, again, it must just start working, those initiatives. Then with regard to municipalities, they're also very important, and it's not unique again to municipalities. In order to actually maintain your infrastructure, you need a credible asset management plan in place. If you've got that in place, you will have sufficient budget, you will make sufficient provision for maintenance, and you will make sufficient provision for refurbishment. And currently, a lot of municipalities don't really have accurate assets registers. Again, there's quite a lot of work ongoing currently in National Treasury also to assist municipalities to get those asset registers in place. And just to maybe highlight some of the things that we have been doing, we've introduced budget regulations, which municipalities must comply with. And that is quite comprehensive and detailed, and it will actually get towards the ring fencing that people refer to. It's compulsory. Each and every municipality must submit and prepare their budgets in terms of those regulations. The issues, like we said, is currently they do comply, but a lot of the information is still missing, and also the information provided is also not always that credible. We're first focusing on getting it right for the bigger municipalities, but over time we're also looking at capacitating provincial treasuries so that they can also support municipalities better in that regard. We're also doing work currently on getting in place a standard chart of accounts, which will ensure that we can actually do the necessary benchmarking against municipalities. And that will, for example, because maintenance in one municipal record will mean one thing, and maintenance in another municipality will mean another thing, refurbishment and the like. If you've got a standard chart of accounts, maintenance will mean the same for each and every municipality. And that's where you can then start doing the comparisons, because currently you will not necessarily compare apples with apples. You will compare apples with something else, which is not necessarily that useful. We've already referred that we've actually got working, our Office of the Accountant General is working with NERSA to get also a common system in place on the accounting side. We've already mentioned just that we're currently also doing work on the local government fiscal framework. And maybe just to highlight this, in 2006-07, municipalities received an equitable share of 20 billion rand. At the end of 2013-14, and that's the existing 2011 budget, municipalities will receive 40 billion rand. So it will double over a period of 6 years' time. Municipal allocations have been growing much faster than provinces or municipal national allocations. So there's really been an acknowledgement that municipalities play a key role. And the issue is all the equitable share money, of course, gets spent, and then the same happens with infrastructure money. It's increased, but it doesn't get spent, and it also crowds out municipal own investment. We So we're not getting the returns we're looking at, because the whole idea is that we add money to the infrastructure side so that municipalities can provide necessary infrastructure to the poor, but the grant money is not supposed to fund infrastructure to the non-poor. That is where municipalities must use the tariffs, they must use their borrowing and the like to fund those types of services. But some of these reforms would hopefully lead to the reforms that we're looking for. Okay, And then just with regard to process, just to highlight there, most probably the second one is quite important. Quite a lot of reference were made to the 27 billion, and it's always mentioned there's 27 billion that needs to be funded, and then everyone keeps quiet. And the question that we need to ask, where is that 27 billion going to come from? And it's always assumed that who's going to stand in for that? And if you listen to discussions today, there's an impression created that the fiscus must fund that. And the question is it a proper manner to fund it? Is it even advisable? Keep in mind that if you look at tariff setting and the way that you need to fund municipalities in terms of their regulations and the way that NERSA regulates them, there's provision made for maintenance and refurbishment. The question is, does it get spent on refurbishment and maintenance? And if you refer today, that it's most probably not necessarily done. So now we say you do the wrong thing, and thank you, because you've been doing the wrong thing, we'll refund you for doing the wrong thing. It's going to create a very perverse incentive to do that. And it's not just unique to the electricity sector, the water sector, the same maintenance problems are there, and they can quote nearly a similar amount, if not a higher amount. What we need to focus on is how can we fix the system? How can we better regulate the system so that we start addressing what's currently a maintenance backlog, but that we also avoid a situation going forward that maintenance backlog just continues growing. And it can be addressed by doing some of the things right, and some of the things is to do better regulation. The other one is to assist municipalities to actually do proper budgeting and actually proper tariff setting. And just look at the holistic strategy. It's not just the funding issue. The funding issue will not solve the problem. We've highlighted today that there's a lot of money in the system that just goes goodbye. So thanks for listening to us, and we know we're contradicting what a lot of other people have said, but we've given the evidence that the fact supports it. That. Thanks very much.
Bye, Danki. Bye, Danki. I see not a single, except Honorable Smart, none of the members are smiling. Is it because it's many people are talking? But wait until the question time. Quite a number of things that you have raised are very striking. Centec? No. Mr. Lou. Sandlack will follow, Vembe will follow. Let's just push as fast as we can. The time constraint as well.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Can I start?
Yes,
please. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to speak here. If I may just, before I start, just mention a few comments on the previous session. Just note that those surcharges are calculated from the municipal electricity consumers. So you don't have a similar surcharge from the ESCOM consumers within a municipality. So when those surcharges are now obtained, they are assisting the tax to build roads, to build libraries, and so on. And you do not get that same surcharge from the ESCOM side. So you're in fact having an unfair cross-subsidization in terms of tax. So we just need to keep that in mind. And then just one thing, when we speak about municipalities, we spoke about 188 municipalities. and they probably have in the area of about 4 million consumers. But just know, just the metros, the six metros actually own 70% of those consumers. The bottom, the smallest 100 municipalities actually own less than 1% of those consumers. So keep that in mind when you talk about municipalities, that, you know, talk about the massive funds and so on, that, you know, how they are distributed in terms of the sizes of municipalities. Chair, then going to the presentation, then I'm doing this on behalf of Dr. De Beer, who's unfortunately overseas, and it probably gives me a little bit of advantage in doing this on his behalf, so if anything goes wrong, if I say something wrong, it's his fault. If I say something right, it'll be because I said so. Thank you.
Well, we'll monitor that.
Chair, I will not be running through the whole thing. Many of the things have been said. So basically, the presentation goes on the overview, the challenges, the prognosis, the options, and then finally the conclusions. In this one, I'd like to point out that we look at the asset base. At the moment, it stands at $260 billion at a 2008 value. And note that we've been speaking about the $27 billion and these values, but note they are in quite a number of years ago. So if you take inflation and the growth, the cost of equipment, you're probably sitting at the current replacement value of about $350 million. We're looking at an average age of the asset base, we said about 45 years, and note that 45 years was also determined in 2008. And later on I'll say something else about the growth of the further aging of this. I'd just like to note under large consumers, then on average, there's 26% of electricity staff are 50 years and older, 62% are between 31 and 50, and 12% are under 30. But note that the average age of electricity staff in critical technical positions are over 50 years of age. So we're finding that a lot of staff are busy retiring and we do not have sufficient time to actually transfer experience to younger staff then. And at the, what we found in municipalities is that 35% of the electricity employment or the staff sit at 35% vacancy rate then. On the next one, the challenges, and we heard this before, that despite the pockets of good performance, the EDI infrastructure shows that the reliability and asset management needs urgent attention. And I think I need to repeat that asset management, and we've heard that many times before, that this is a serious problem within specifically the municipal side. The current practices in the EDI are no guarantees for business sustainability and economic growth. Evidence of significant underinvestment in people development, infrastructure, and asset management is seen. Deterioration of electricity-related services delivered in many areas in the country. The EDI, and I'm jumping the next one, I think that was basically because of the Kuberg problem that we had, that we experienced that losses, but it gives an indication of what can happen if there's a huge loss that we actually create economic problem within the industry. The EDI Holdings Infrastructure Assessment in 2008 and the development of the approach to distribution asset management, so the definition for ADAM, revealed that the maintenance, refurbishment, and strengthening backlog at that point in time was $27.4 billion, and this is in 2008, and that we saw that the backlog was growing at a rate of $2.5 billion per annum. Now, when you look at electricity network, and on average it lived 50 years. So if you were doing your maintenance properly, you need to keep that age at roughly 25 years. So you've got to replace parts of the network as you go along so that your average age of the network sits at about 25 years. Which means then you have to replace or refurbish the network a 50th or 2%. So if I mention that $350 billion, you probably at this stage need to spend about 7 billion rand per annum to keep your network of not going longer, aging longer. Now, if we are, that backlog is growing at $2.5 billion, and if that value was in 2008, it probably now stands at $3 billion, it means that we've went backwards. Where we were at 45 years, we probably are now at 47 years. And that backlog has probably grown to about $45 billion. So we just need to, you know, taking escalation into consideration and the amount that we did not spend in the past. So we really need to, the longer we talk about this, the worse the problem is going to get and the bigger the problem to rectify. Also noting that if you look at an asset and you're maintaining that asset, you find initially that you have teething problems. So if you should you go and buy a car, initially you find some things that break, and once you fix that, the car lasts and goes well for a long time until it gets to the end of its life and it starts breaking, and then you start spending a lot of money to keep that car repaired. Now, if we sit at 47 years now, we're in that so-called bathtub curve. We're getting to the upward angle, and we're starting to spend a lot of money to fix things that are breaking. And because we are spending so much money to fix these things, we haven't got sufficient money to refurbish or to replace. And that is the situation that we feel that municipalities are currently getting into. There's so much breaking down that they do not have sufficient funds to replace it. The prognosis then, where there is a plan in place to address the generation-related challenges, there is no integrated strategy stroke plan in place to address the distribution-related challenges, and I guess that is why, that's the whole reason why we're meeting today. The current performance of the EDI will not be able to underpin the projected economic growth or create sustainable jobs. The performance of the EDI is deteriorating at a rapid rate, and service delivery is going to become an even bigger challenge going forward. If we are serious about a sustainable solution to the electricity challenges of South Africa, the EDI and the electricity supply industry, or ESI as a whole, requires an integrated and holistic approach with support from government, all industry players, business, and citizens of this country. The options then, to ensure, amongst others, the sustainability of the EDI, to support the required economic growth and create job opportunities in South Africa, is essential that staff recruitment, training development, and retention be addressed. We will note that at the moment where we require quite a number of artisans, for instance, to enter into the market, that we are way below that. We just do not train sufficient staff to actually take over that. And in essence, we are shrinking as far as staff development is concerned. Technology be leveraged to enhance service delivery and to improve, amongst others, customer service, revenue management, and network performance. So to put in electronic systems to actually monitor what we are doing and make sure that when we spend it wisely. Update the ADEM plan, adopt it, and roll it out as an integrated multi-year plan to address the current electricity distribution infrastructure-related challenges, and identify the entities and institutions with capacity to provide assistance consolidation to bring about improvement in the areas where the biggest challenges are. Then finally, Chair, conclusion, a visible and committed strategy, strategic leadership, sponsorship, and firm decisions are required to bring about the desire to change the EDI. Noting that we have started in 2000 to say that we will restructure, and we've moved on 10 years and we have not really done a restructuring. So we really need to firm this up and really do something about it. The support of every participant in EDI will be required to bring about the desired change. From a technology deployment perspective, it is essential to move away from the business-as-usual approach and pursue appropriate technology solutions and create a more intelligent grid, which will improve service delivery. For an EDI infrastructure turnaround strategy in terms of governance and finance, it would be advisable to consider a similar approach as what is used in respect of the National Electrification Program, a bit of opposition to the previous speaker then. It is essential that the infrastructure funding allocation be defined and that the investment of the money earmarked for infrastructure is correctly applied. The infrastructure investment must be monitored to ensure that the refurbishment and replacement backlog shrinks. Then finally, Chair, if I can just mention about electrification, I know, for instance, the City of Cape Town's electrification method and how they do this. Remember that the funds coming in to do electrification is coupled to the building of housing. So at the moment, Cape Town, all the built houses, the proper built houses in Cape Town has got electricity. But to spend the electrification funds, you need somebody else to build a house to enable you to actually provide the electricity. And you're not allowed to spend that money if that house is not 80% built. So very often the money has to be transferred back because the houses were not built. So although electricity may be bad in a sense, noting that it's coupled with the actual building of houses as well. So we need to integrate with the housing component to make sure that we actually be able to spend those money very wisely. Thank you very much, Chair.
But when we went to Atlantis, as I remember, was still in trade and industry. There were houses which were completed but not electrified. In fact, we raised that with ESCOM because the community in Atlantis, you know, honorable, were up in arms. And ESCOM promised us that they will relook at that. You know, it was not 80%, it was 100% completion. And I'm just commenting, you know, it comes out of memory. Stantec. Viva Mangaung, viva. Oh, but it was too hot in January. 34, 35 degrees.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to members as well and colleagues. Chair, I'll just give a background to the model we are presenting at Sendlec. This model was firstly developed when Sendlec was positioning itself for RED 2. Just to give a short background on who we are and what is our story. We are a state-owned company that was established in April 2004 as a municipal entity wholly owned by what was then called Mangaung Local Municipality, is now a metro. We provide electricity distribution service in the Free State. We do it in five local municipalities currently, Mangaung being one of them. Kopanong, Naledi, Mansupa, and Mukare. That relationship, Chair, gives value to these municipalities in terms of their training and development. We have, in terms of that, a fully functional training center which gives skills to employees of these municipalities. We give training also to sitters. In fact, what happens is that there are sitters that are in partnership with Sendlec. We are training students that are doing the N courses, and we are giving bursaries also to them to do BTEC with the Central University of Technology. We're having a partnership with them. We support these struggling municipal electricity distributors in the Free State. We're also now doing the embedded generation. It's already commissioned. By June, it's going to make a contribution to the grid. We have always been the greatest supporter of...
people everywhere, there's always Chaila time. You just unfair to ourselves. Okay, just carry on, Milan.
Thank you.
Although I don't remember you introducing yourself, but just carry on. Thank you, Chair.
My name is Lungile Pomen. I was saying, Chair, Sendlec has always been the greatest supporter of EDI restructuring objectives. And we now know that on the 8th of December 2010, Cabinet took that decision to immediately stop the restructuring of the industry. The implications were that new industries needed to address the EDI challenges, and a new strategy and approach was needed, and a new willingness and commitment by stakeholders to address EDI challenges was also needed. The EDI objectives have been mentioned. I'm not going to go through them. What we are currently advocating in the Free State is a case for a provincial footprint. In other words, for CENTLEC to have a footprint in the province. The reason being that there are economic drivers there, initiatives currently that the provincial government is undertaking, and the national government has announced recently other developments that are going to take place there. So it is important for CENTLEC, therefore, to be able to cover those areas as well. Just to mention a few of those, rather not to mention, but they are in the presentation. Once we have this provincial footprint, what we are going to be seeing happening is that there will be economies of scale that will improve the profitability of the municipalities that we are in partnership with. The provincial growth plans and the socio-economic needs will form part of CENTLEC planning, and the design requirements will be taken over by CENTLEC because we have a design and development department which is fully functional. The cost will drop significantly for the other municipalities in that regard because we will be having that as a shared service, and CENTLEC will be in a better position to raise funds to address the current capital backlogs. What we are proposing as a model is the route, which is an FDA route. It's a down-to-earth mode of operation. It is not a complex one. You have a service authority, which is a municipality, your Kopanong, Naledi, Mukari, Mansupa, and Mangaung. We are currently in discussions with Litsimeng as another municipality that we are getting in. CENTLEC then comes in as a service provider, and we then have a service delivery agreement between the service provider and service authorities. And what we do in that, we are looking in the issue of us being a service provider in terms of designing tariffs for these municipalities. We do their electrification, we do maintenance and refurbishment, and we take into account their IDPs. Now, when we do that, we provide these services and we become the delivery agent for these municipalities. And then there are five focus areas in our advocacy for the provincial footprint. We give the reliability of supply, and we endeavor to eradicate the backlogs in terms of electrification. The demand side management is one of the key areas as well. We develop skills in the sense that we increase the artisan output. What we do, we train them and then redeploy them to these municipalities, but keep track of their performance while they are servicing these municipalities. That gives profitability for municipalities in the sense that we compete with consultants in terms of electrification, and because we're doing it as CENTLEC, as a government entity, the cost of electrification becomes far more lesser than when these municipalities use outside consultants. We then have a centralized services like your vending, your SCADA, and we specialize in technical services.
I'm sure everyone must have noticed I get very sensitive to acronyms, because we sit in Parliament and handle thousands of things.
Yes.
We live, eat, breathe, and dream skater, which we do not know.
SCADA is the system which we utilize to manage the network. It's an electronic system, and with that you've got all the inputs of the distribution centers from a central control room.
Thank you. We do the network protection, the design, training and tariff design. These are the municipalities geographically under Centlec. This is the electrification backlog. This is information that we get from our other colleagues who have made presentations. EDI. That's the refurbishment backlogs. In terms of our network infrastructure requirement, this is actually where we should be, but because of the problems in terms of that which is not attended to, we are at a situation where anytime your electricity can go down. So we need to leverage on the relationship of these municipalities and Centlec so that we can assist them in terms of their backlogs. Our value proposition is a simple one. As a free state, we have enablers, the constitution being one of them, applicable to all the other regions. We have a benefit of having Ordinance 8 of 1962, which was not affected by the restructuring. We have a support from our provincial politicians in terms of supporting these municipalities, and of course the Section 76 of the Municipal Systems Act. This is basically what the ordinance is saying. In other words, all you need in terms of that ordinance is a council resolution for any municipality to become a partner in the relationship. If it doesn't work, any council will then also take a council resolution to undo the relationship. It does not affect the assets of the municipality. The municipality remains with their own assets. And the constitutional way of doing it also is set out. I'm not going to go through it in the interest of time. Section 76 also. But what I want to just emphasize in terms of the Section 76 route, these services for municipalities are either done internally or externally. We then become the external mechanism. And once we become the external mechanism, before we can service a municipality, then we are obliged to go into a service delivery agreement with a municipality so that we can be able to check our performance, or the municipality can be able to check our performance and evaluate our performance. This is what we want to do. I've gone through this one. I'll skip this quickly. The essence of our advocacy is that we have these driving forces. We need to have a security of supply, technology that is enabling the situation currently. We need to manage revenue and issues of efficiencies. Now, if we leave the situation as it is, you have two scenarios. You stay as is, and there are going to be a lot of uncertainties. But if you go the route we are proposing, at least it gives you a sense of comfort in the sense that there are going to be certainties in your operations. This is our growth shape. Issues of governance are covered there. Maintenance and refurbishment backlogs. We are envisaging to have a center of excellence services, a provincial call center, and technology. And then those are the things we do: customer interaction and support, training and development, switching, network design, etc. We also are in the process of developing a provincial vending system, and we are having a benefit of having the telecoms ready in the province, so it will be easy to deploy that one. These are the benefits you can derive from the model we are proposing. What are the advantages? You don't have to change the constitution in order to implement the program. The Systems Act processes are easy to follow. They enable the rollout. There's no transfer of assets required. It's a seamless integration with municipal processes. Local government is already a sphere of government that can implement easily. The ease of integration, in other words, your staff transfers, collective agreements, are within your SALGA framework. There is no conflict between your Public Finance Management Act and your Municipal Finance Management Act timeframes. It is very close to political structures, and it ensures support and oversight. So in the absence of an alternative, we volunteer Centrelec for adoption by DOE as a pilot. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, but unfortunately, you Centrelec today has disappointed me. I've heard Centrelec's presentation 2 times before. I don't know why they were so economic with their information today. That's the reason why I brought them to you, honorable members, to get an exposure. But what would be helpful is, in the face of what they have said, is for the National Treasury, the Department of Energy, ESCOM, AMEU, and others, and also representatives from Parliament to make some written comments on this, as part of the journey. But I must highlight that I expected more from Centrelec. I mean, we did, even to when it was the People's Assembly, we took a turn and went to Centrelec, you know, just to pop in, and we really got, you know, quite an exposure. I don't know why they are so economic today, but that's part of life. Thanks very much. Now let's have them. Thank you. That's the also. I'm alluding to them, but not to be so economic. I know we're done with energy, but what we're doing with these two presentations is to say, in the light of what we have been getting throughout the day, here are people who are making an honest and earnest attempt to look for alternatives. You know, had Centrelec articulated how they are grappling with that, as they did, you know, we would have been able to get a very interesting picture. I don't say a good one, but a very interesting picture as to how a group of municipalities are trying their best to look for alternatives, you know. That's very, very helpful. And as the Bom Kororo and Bom Sanda are preparing themselves, I just once again reiterate that we... Unfortunately, we are missing Northwest experience, but of course we were tipped very late last week, you know, Thursday. So we hope as we move along in the chain, we'll invite them so that they can share with us. Because it's very interesting if they're handling this, the or trying to address the solution, you know, on the project from, you know, a provincial angle, you know. Centrelec is handling a group of, you know, municipalities. Rembe is a district municipality, isn't it? And Northwest is actually, you know, a province. So let's just keep in mind this. I would like to welcome the Rembe district. Now. I understand even the mayor came. We're very, very much humbled for the mayor to come all the way to here and to make sure that they tell us their story and share with us.
Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for the opportunity. I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Florence Chombere, the Executive Mayor of Vembe District Municipality. With me, I'm with our Municipal Manager, Mr. Makumure Thomas. Honorable Chairperson, a program for the acceleration of the delivery of electricity services to households in the Vembe District Municipality is what we are going to present this afternoon. And we call this program Operation CHEDZA. CHEDZA is a vendor word, meaning light.
For those who didn't know that.
Yes. Honorable Chairperson, the presentation will cover the following areas: the executive summary, objectives of the program, background information, challenges faced by the municipalities, guiding policies and government directives, our approach, our program funding plan, program stakeholders, thank you very much, risk analysis and management, demonstration of benefits, and conclusion. Honorable Chair, in terms of our executive summary, this proposal aims to practically address the unlocking of electricity services delivery to the household in the Vembe District Municipality. Initial delivery of services to more than 20,700 households before the end of June 2013 using the INEP grant Schedule 6 and 7 funding allocation in the year 2012-2013 and 2013-2014 fiscal years. We also want to bring to the attention of honorable members that one of our local municipalities, which is Tulamela, has already received an allocation of 90 million, which is going to benefit almost 83 villages through the same approach. Honorable Chairperson, we are also targeting to create more than 250,000 person days of employment and training opportunities over the period ending 2013. Honorable Chair, should the jobs funding application, which we have already submitted to the DBSA on the 31st July 2011, be successful, this program will take forward other government objectives as follows. It will assist in promoting the energy efficiency campaign through the use of split meter prepaid system as a strategy to reduce incidences of meter tampering and thus discouraging cases of illegal connections. It will also assist in reducing the electrification cycle, life cycle cost through the use of circuit breakers instead of fuses for the benefit of the customers and ESCOM. The identification of areas that will need public lighting installations and the pursuance of creating a sense of public safety and the reduction of crime incidences. It will also assist in implementing the reforestation program to plant new trees in the project areas to replace trees cut. One other benefit will be on the opportunity for municipalities to apply for the electricity distribution licenses for their areas in pursuance of ensuring growth, development, and sustainability. Comrade, Honorable Chair, in terms of the objectives, this program will assist us to accelerate the delivery of electricity services to households in the Vembe District Municipality. We'll also assist in positioning the municipalities in the district to achieve the universal access to electricity by 2014-2015 fiscal year. It will also contribute to the attainment of the United Nations Millennium Developmental Goals through accelerating access to modern energy services, and also to unlock or stimulate the achievement of other opportunities for the benefit of the communities in the Lembe district. The, in terms of the background information, it will cover the geographical layout, the description of the program, electrification backlog. Honorable Chair, in terms of the geographical layout, let me indicate that Lembe District Municipality is part of Limpopo Province, and the area covers almost 21,407 square kilometers. It is a largely rural district with about 775 communities, and in terms of population, we are at 1.2 million people, with four local municipalities, namely Tulamela, Makado, Mutare, and Musina. In terms of the program description, Honorable Chair, this program aims to deliver electricity services to more than 20,700 households in the Lembe District Municipality before the end of June 2013, using INEP grant funding allocation in the 2012-2013 and the 2013-2014 fiscal years, like I've already alluded to. In terms of the electrification backlog, if you check in terms of the information appearing on the slide, we've got almost 298,883 households without electricity, and the backlog is estimated at 89,805. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, in terms of the houses that does not have electricity, you can just have a look on the slide and see what type of houses we are talking about. We are not necessarily talking about informal settlements. Those are some of the houses where you find that people don't have electricity. I'm going to jump this one because it's still the same. With regard to challenges facing us as the district, Honorable Chair, approximately 90,000 households in the Lembe District Municipality are without access to electricity services. This backlog is currently being reduced at a rate of less than 9,000 households per year. And if we are moving in this rate, Honorable Chair, the universal electricity access will be achieved beyond the 2020 year. The high electrification backlog is impacting negatively on the education of our learners. And one other challenge, the attainment of the UN's Millennium Developmental Goals in the Lembe District Municipality will not be realized. The continued use of firewood is contributing to extensive soil erosion and desertification of the land. And this is impacting negatively to us as the district, particularly because we rely more on the communal farming. Honorable Chair, as I'm proceeding with challenges, the Lembe District Municipality do not have electricity distribution licenses in our areas. We've got only two former white towns, namely Luitrecht and Musina, where the two municipalities are able to distribute electricity. Currently, on completion of projects by the municipalities, the infrastructure is handed over to ESCOM for operation, maintenance, and revenue collection. And this is creating serious challenges to us, particularly because when we deliver these services to our people, we were also expecting to increase our revenue collection. The government is calling for the expediting of spending on capital projects that are funded by conditional grants as per the Division of Revenue Bill, gazetted on 24th January 2011, number 33959. You can see some of the challenges as reflected on the slide. Honorable Chair, on policies and directives, we will be focusing more on policy frameworks applicable, directives from government. The policy frameworks, as the district, we have already adopted our municipal IDP regarding the electrification backlogs in the municipality. The Department of Energy Integrated National Electrification Program policy framework is also guiding us as a district. The 2011 revision, Division of Revenue Bill number 33959 of the 24th January 2011, the MFMA Circular 51 as issued by the National Treasury Department in February 2012. Honorable Chair, I'm just going to quote some of the directives as presented by our leaders. A guarantee of 15.2 billion has been approved for the Development Bank of Southern Africa, enabling it to extend capital to poorer municipalities for infrastructure projects. A budget speech 2010 by Minister of Finance Pravin Gordhan, which was presented on the 17th February 2010. I'm going to jump other information as per the quotes from our some of the presentations by our leaders. I will then go straight to our integrated approach, which is then reflecting on how the process is going to be implemented. If you check, we're talking about the energy efficiency, sustainability of infrastructure, program finance strategy, and all those others who are also part and parcel of the integrated approach, which I'm not going to dwell much in the interest of time. Our funding plan will be as follows: roadmap to securing INEP grant funding, the job funding application, our business model. In terms of our roadmap to INEP grant allocation, Honorable Chairperson, selection and scheduling of the villages to be electrified, captured in the IDP, is already in place. We have already, as the district, appointed the service provider to execute the professional services. We, in terms of the designs, confirm with ESCOM distribution on the feasibility of the electrification of the selected villages within the projected time frame. We have submitted application to the Department of Energy for the INEP grant allocation for the electrification of selected villages. We are now waiting for the gazetting of the allocated INEP grant allocation over the MTEF period, and then submission of electrification designs to ESCOM for approval. And in terms of our job fund application, Honorable Chair, is as reflected in the slide. Our business model is just reflecting on the stakeholders and what role each stakeholder is going to play. If you check in terms of the Department of Energy, that's where we want them to approve or to give go ahead for INEP conditional grant, the National Treasury, the pledging of the grant approval in terms of the MFMA Circular 51 for this bridging finance agreement. Honorable Chair, slide number 8 is about project stakeholders, which I'm also not going to dwell much on. Risk analysis and management is also indicated. If you check in terms of number one, we are talking about injuries to workers and communities, causes not wearing safety clothing, possible impact, delays in the execution of the works due to investigation process. Even on this one, Honorable Chair, I'm not going to dwell much. In terms of the demonstration of benefits, we are looking much on the type of the benefit and the benefit description. Number one, there we are saying 1A, loan cost, the interest repayment and fees associated with the bridging finance, the interest will be at 8.075%, which can be discounted if the security or pledging approval by the National Treasury Department can be granted. The savings in escalation cost, we are saying using BER indices, the savings in the project.
The BER. Sorry, we South Africans were notorious for acronyms, and it's disempowering. Apologies for that.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. We also want to apologize for that because I'm also trying to check with the MM. It seems as if all of us, we have forgotten the municipal manager.
Okay, just get on.
Okay, thank you. Let me proceed to the next slide. I will now be on conclusion. In addition to the benefits derived from the acceleration of the delivery of electricity services to the households in the Rembe District Municipality, this electrification program supports and takes forward other government key priorities in the following ways. Encouraging partnership with other government departments, municipalities, parastatals, and the private sector to achieve shared objectives, and supporting the government's job creation agenda through creation of employment and training opportunities in the electrification program. Honorable Chair, I want to thank you very much for the time. Thank you.
I trust and hope TBSA is still around. Please don't run away, because you also have to tell us who your private sector is. You've got a very interesting presentation, and I hope you will share us your presentation, because the one we have here, I noticed that from the onset you were reading from an executive summary, and you don't have you really improvised it. I know. Don't even apologize. These things happen, but you've got to share the one you've been presenting to us.
No, Honorable Chairperson, we're going to do that. We decided to summarize the presentation after you keep on saying we don't have enough time. So we felt maybe we will be assisting, but anyway, we will make the presentation available.
And decided to add. Amanda. Honourable members, this is the last presentation, and the time now is almost after 7. We have overrun 30 minutes. The problem is that the chair and all the members are here. Be very careful. I live very late in this complex. Somebody warned me that one day I'll meet Foster's in Sherwood. Ghosts was walking down this passage when everybody has gone home. So you can't depend on me to decide when to close on it. Can you be democratic? What do you want us to do now? We've got all the presentations. what is left out is for questions. Would you like some little bit of time very for questions, but very brief? Or would you like us just to close and include and work out a way forward? I'm giving options, starting with my chair and the rest of the members. Any ideas? I'm really open to see how we take it forward now.
Chair, I'm happy to forward a set of questions by tomorrow through to you or through to the secretary. That I hope that there's maybe a time frame that we get respondents back, so within the next week, you know, that is like a week period. I'm happy to do that, and if there's a necessity that we would like to have some of these entities to come back, I think there is definitely a follow-up that we must pursue, especially in light of what Treasury has brought to the table today, and that will maybe go forward to something else.
Oh, Minister Sinclair, why were you sitting at the right at the back? I keep on looking this side now. Okay, bye, thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Yep. The next government always starts at the back, then they move forward. Yeah. Chair, speaking about democracy, I think if we vote now, then opposition might be more than the governing party in terms of some of these issues. Because the reality is that there's a lot of policy issues that's been raised today. And I think the one shortcoming, if you like, was the whole issue that the ministers is not here. Ministers are not here to address some of these very critical issues. Because the one critical issue that I still don't have the answer is, why was the EDI stopped? I mean, there was a cabinet decision on that. But what was the specific reasons for that? And like that, there's many other political or policy issues that we need to debate. So I would suggest that if we want to continue, that in the next round we get members of the executive to come and also explain the policy position from government on some of these issues. Thank you.
Okay, Minister. Oh, Babu Lucas.
So I'm very pleased that we had this meeting, because we got all the role players together in one place. It's unfortunate that we had to go to Parliament and time has been against us, because I've learned so much today, and people talking when all the people are together, it's highly appreciated, and a better understanding of some of the things. However, the issue that is, to my way of thinking, is the relation with municipality ESCOM. And I think this is a very important issue. We need to look at it, especially in the rural areas. It is serious.
Thank you very much. Okay, fine. Oh, no matter.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I also like to echo my voice to say thank you for all the presentations. They were very, very, very helpful. And I really would like to hear about Sandler, because I think the presentation that was done, really, it's something that we really lack, because every time we talk about skills, and when Sandler is here talking about skills, what do they do? Perhaps they could help us with this skill thing, so that we can have really municipalities that are moving in the right direction. Because, thank you.
You wait until they tell you in detail. That's why I'm angry with them, Bobo man. I'm sorry for them, Kulwa. I'm telling you, you know, wait until they explain you their network, the intersectoral approach in their training. A very small outfit, not a big, you know, but it's a concept that makes me so upbeat and excited, you know, that, you know, they should share. Not that it will have some one or two areas that needs correction and additions, but the
the very fact that they've taken such an initiative, and one of the things, I know we should be closing because the last buses are at 8, but the other thing is that when I googled St. Lake, the concept of St. Lake in the area in 58 is not as far back as 2004, as I just said. No, it dates back years ago, you know. It's like how the ANC was born. Last weekend, I was in a workshop about that. And we argued, when was the ANC born? People said 1912. Others say, no, it was born before, because all the wars against the colonialists brought to the birth of the ANC. You know, that's a very good analogy, you know. You were not born. Okay, you were formed before. And it's very interesting, if you could look at that, please share that with us. Put together and bring it to the air, so that it shows that all along there have been attempts, you know, to have some variances, if I can call it, of the reds themselves. You know, I was very struck when I read that, you know, just by googling, you know, just you know, St. Lake's history is far longer than its formal and legalistic existence. Honourable members, you, who Honourable Sinclair, we share a corner because he sees there are a lot of policy issues which I'm sure we'll all concur, and also would like to see ministers here. My humble response to attending you on that and other members is to say, would it be fine if you would allow myself, Honourable Adams, Honourable De Beer, and the other chairs who could make it to come here. We have a little bit of a nice endeavor. Take into account all that has been sent here, sit down and work out how do we take the matter forward. We then feedback to all our committees. Because then Honorable Sinclair, obviously, as we take it forward, we will impress now on the ministers, you know, that this is how we want to take this project forward, and obviously, in future, they must make time, and we even may have to negotiate, you know, from time to time to work out around dates such that we ensure their availability. I was smiling and joking to Honorable Adams, and said, yes, that we have started something here. But obviously, as we said, I'm very, very sure everyone will concur. We really have achieved something today. We haven't dealt with every issue that has been presented. Our national treasury obstructing us, as well as the AMEU, as well as Mr. Lowe, very, very helpful, you know, bringing other experiences. And I wish even DBSA would have had some time. Anyway, sorry for that, because DBSA is one of our favorite friends when it comes to issues like this. But we will look at that. We'll also ensure that in future, not only Northwest, but any other initiative, you know, is brought to our attention. Because, I mean, I thought it's only Central and November, and then a few days before, somebody said that Northwest is making this attempt. It is important for us as Parliament, but it's also important for the various stakeholders to learn that there are other initiatives out there on the ground in a post-RED era. And let us galvanize them, let us analyze them, let us look at how they bring forth, how they inform us and educate us and prepare us for a final, durable, sustainable program that will ensure a restructured EDI. Because right now we're talking of restructuring the electricity distribution industry. And the aim here is to ensure that somewhere we will say that we are convinced as Parliament that the executive, together with the parastatals and whoever else, have worked out a definite and a convincing program that will say, at least by 2020, by 2030, or 2050, whatever, we will be seeing, you know, an 80-90% restructured electricity distribution industry. And I was small after something, you will die if you don't say it.
Okay, just for a point of clarity, You mentioned that the various chairs wants to come up with some sort of a program of action. In my mind, it's some sort of a subcommittee that will maybe put the way forward from where we are going. And I think it will be, it won't do any justice if you do not take any of the opposition on board on that and have one party views on that. And I think maybe that should be open.
You don't trust us. Yeah, you don't trust us. But obviously, we honorable Adams, I'm sure. Oh, okay, ma.
Dear person, it's not that we don't trust you. Very many honest and open things were said today. And the biggest elephant in the room is electricity services provided by local municipalities, and the money is used for something else. Treasury said the money is in the system. And if we do a SENLET and we allow it to you people, then you're going to create another layer of job creation where you cannot protect people who are not doing their job. We must sort the thing out on the ground. We mustn't go and create another level. And that's what we're worried about. That's where we want to put in our contribution.
What a pity, we don't have much time, because now you're forcing me to start shaking my other hat. You know, my political hat is hidden by the chair's hat. Because at the end of the day, who initiated this? We would have gone for a sweet, nice, edible item for today, isn't it? Adam, which could have made us glory and glitter in the public, but we took a very sensitive issue and put it as the leadership, because you must remember, chairs are not just, we represent speakers right here, you represent the chair, but we decided to take the bull by its horn, isn't it? But I'm sure you'll agree, we'll be flexible and there's nothing to hide. We'll work it out, you know, and see who. This is not going to be a permanent structure. We are saying, because this is so complex, because there have been so many presentations, we'll have to bring back to each and every committee a plan. I can't sit with Comrade A.D. Freddy and just plan and then throw it to a standing committee for finance, to the portfolio committee for COPTA. We'll bring them together and say, look, this is what was said to us. I'm sure our committee secretaries will keep putting the key points, you know. And how do we do forward, take it forward? We cannot even make judgmental comments on that. We just have to say, this is what we are proposing as we move forward. Probably for the whole year. Because already, who said that we must have another follow-up meeting by the end of the year and make it under the year? We've got to take into account all those things. But obviously, as I say, then, Honorable Adam, let's really be flexible, let's be accommodative, that's leadership in any case, and there's nothing to hide. We'll work with the, someone from or one or two people from the opposition, not necessarily to sort that out now, ne? Yeah. No, let me finish. You are supposed to close. I don't close. You know, when we chair meetings, I don't close. You close meetings every time you chair. Don't forget that. It's always a standard practice. I think I'm done. All I wanted was to just persuade people that, remember, we are triggering a journey here, which at the end of the day, everyone, all stakeholders, must have confidence that really, by a certain year, if we have not had 100%, we should be at 80-90%. The only thing I can say, Chair, maybe next time we should ensure some presence of the private sector. A kickstart has been made in private sector. Now, it must be one, two, Baya Dangi, and then Honorable Adam will close.
Okay, I think that, let me thank you and the staff that has worked tirelessly in the background for making this meeting a success, and for the honorable members, and also for the presenters, the entities, the government departments that have taken the time of really taking this meeting seriously. and to have stayed from this morning up until now. Normally Eskom lights out by 4 o'clock or something, but I think it was really a great effort for you to, and we really appreciate the effort that you have stayed with us the whole day. I think in terms of taking this program forward, we have got committee programs, and none of our committee programs can just be rather stamped or pulled those through unless it's been adopted and accepted by the full committee of both houses. And it will be on our committee program, and please feel free, always we've got this thing, Chair, in the select committee, that on our program, the views of everybody, even the dreaming government in waiting, their views are also taken on board, and the official opposition's view, which there's a fight about, are also taken on board, but everybody's views are taken on board. So, Honorable Smala, you don't have to be afraid of your views won't. In actual fact, if we don't have a meeting like this, Chair, I would say on twice a year, because then we will be failing our duties as public representatives in terms of the Constitution, where our oversight mandate lays in checking government departments and entities. We'll be failing that. We'll be failing the communities that has voted. We'll be failing our Constitution. And that's why it is imperative for us to keep up with these meetings. And I think at the next meeting, we should definitely try and get the executive here, as Honorable Sinclair suggested here, so that the executive can also answer the policy issues. We can't expect Ubaba Duma and Nkosi to, although he knows what it is, but we don't want to put him in the hot seat. The same as with Karen de Villiers, we don't want to put her in the hot seat. Let the minister come and explain and tell us what the policy matters and issues will be. So, Chair, with that in mind, I see everybody wants to go to the hotel rooms, that is in hotel rooms. They want to go and watch Isi Dingo and all that, and Novangu and stuff, specifically the people from Zembe. Novangu for them, it's like... so they want to go and watch that.
No, protest. Together with me, I'm a Movango fan.
Oh. They're all going Movango fan. So let me not keep you much, and thank you very much. There is a meeting called for Friday for the free basic services. Arika, where is that at? V454? V454, 9 o'clock. Those of you that is interested, please, because most of the entities will be there again. I don't know whether you are going home to Joburg or where you are from, but the economy of the Western Cape needs you. So invest in the Western Cape economy. Put all the money here. But ladies and gentlemen, it was really a fruitful meeting, and therefore I would really like to thank you for that. With that in mind, this meeting stands.